Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And we're about to discuss the topic, should our mayor and city council get a raise? This is on next Tuesday's city council agenda. The mayor is asking that her annual pay shall be half of the average annual base rate salary for a city department head. The city council is asking that their annual pay shall be half of the annual base rate salary for a city assistant department head. These raises would take effect October 1st, 2022. Based on my estimation, these are not 3% raises. That said, in the past, the people rejected a pay raise for the city manager, David Cook, and the city council unanimously voted for it. What are the people to do if we overwhelmingly reject these raises at city council meetings and they still put it on the ballot for a vote? Should an independent task force have tested the waters before this even became an agenda item? Local government should involve citizens in their policymaking process in a variety of ways, such as public comment periods, during regular city council meetings and special neighborhood meetings with neighborhood associations on issues affecting the city. But at the end, legislative bodies make the decisions, and voters must abide by those decisions. Those who are not satisfied with the outcome can always seek to change their representative by voting a new candidate during the next election cycle. So if we, the people, feel that we have no voice, the people have no choice but to elect people in those seats, the will of the people. Tonight, we will look at whether our current mayor and city council have listened to the voice of the people, or are they voting in voting blocks on agenda items and other city business. That's what we're talking about tonight, y'all. We're talking about a city council and mayor who have been in office for less than 8 months. Most were sworn in on June 15, 2021. I believe Michael Crane was the only one that came on board in May. That said, a lot of people feel their job performances are not even at average, let alone above average, to be getting huge pay raises. So tonight, that's what we're going to be talking about with my panel. So I have with me tonight, we have Pastor Alcee Chris of the Aletheia Temple Church here in Fort Worth. We have Adrian Smith, and we also have Thomas Torlinkazi. Is everybody's line open?
Yes,
locked and loaded.
I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay, y'all, let's get started. You know, so we got. What do we have? 8 council seats, and we have a mayor for a total of 9 seats. And so what I thought we'd do is just kind of go down the line with the council members individually, because when you're evaluated, typically you're evaluated individually and not as a group. But this will be a group raise, however. But I thought the only way that would be fair would be able to look at each district individually and see how we rated our council people. So tonight, this is going to be kind of like a report card. We're not jugging at anyone. We're just basically saying what we see. So let's start with Council 9 and then go back to 2. So let's start with Elizabeth Beck. Elizabeth Beck is the city council person for District 9. We know that Elizabeth Beck is a lawyer. We know that she's a mother. We know that she was in Iraq. Those are some of the things that we know about her before she came on board as a city council person. This job, by the way, as city council pays $25,000 a year. But what I see when I see Elizabeth Beck, I see an air of childishness. And when I say that, when I see a city council person, and I don't know if her and Chris are ever aware that the cameras are right on them as we're watching our city council meetings, and I see them make fun of people as they come to the or leave the podium after they've spoken. I would say to that, when people come down there, they're taking time out of their personal schedule to come down and voice an opinion about how they feel about a particular issue. That said, we want to see professionalism from our council people. And one thing I noticed, let me be clear, y'all, Bob Willoughby don't need me to take up for him. He does a good job down there at council by himself. But last week, I said something last week about Bob Willoughby, but he's the one that keeps coming to mind with some of the things that I'm seeing. Bob Willoughby called Councilman Crane a Hollywood Crane. He gave him a nickname. He called him Hollywood Crane.
Yeah.
He did. And as he was leaving the podium, Elizabeth Beck took her hand and motioned like a gun, and she pointed at Crane as though, yeah, he took a shot at you. Well, that's not what we want to see from our council people. And I also noticed that when the people from Hemphill went down there in large numbers of Hispanic people went down, and they had an issue with an apartment complex going up in Hemphill. I think it's a low-income, if you will, housing complex that is going to be put there. they were begging her to postpone the vote because they said, you know, we just want to talk to you, if we could, a little bit more about this before you make this vote. Elizabeth Beck gaslit that thing that night and had somebody taken out by the marshals. So what I see about her, that's just my opinion, some of the things that I've noticed, it's almost a childishness about the way she's doing things. But I don't know. Y'all tell me what y'all think.
You didn't rate her. What's your grade for her, though?
I think she's below average at best.
Okay.
At best.
Okay,
go ahead.
Chris, Carrie, I'll just say this. Basically, to the constituents of District 9, your former council representative, Ms. Ann Zeta, she did not conduct herself in such a manner. She was I'm sure she represented your district to the fullest and to the best of her ability. She did all she could to make District 9 what it is, and this is a slap in the face to what she left in place for District 9. So I would give Ms. Ann Zeta, based on your observation of her, and you know, I give her a F minus.
Are we talking about Ann Zeta or are we talking about Elizabeth Beck?
Elizabeth Beck. Okay. I just use Ann as a model, because I know Ann, she didn't act like this. She got District 9 to where it was, you know, and I think this is a slap in the face to everything she has left in place. I think with Elizabeth being in that seat, she thinks she's arrived, because remember, she had a stint in politics, I think, at one point. You know what I'm saying? And I think when I met her over at the MedStar facility out here on the west side, because they gave us a tour when we was, you know, when we were doing as council, you know, trying to, you know what I'm saying, they gave us a tour or whatever and had to sit down with us. And I asked her, I said, so you ran once before for office or whatever. And it was kind of snobbish. She's like, yeah, but you don't. I said, so what, kind of just trying to get some advice from her, you know, because she ran for office before. She said, oh, you don't get it on the first time. So basically, she's like saying I just try to get some, you know, some advice what she could give me, because she's run before. She said, oh, well, you don't get it on the first try. Something she said like that. And then she walked off kind of snobbish. But to the constituents of District 9, she's smelling herself. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Wow. Pastor Chris.
Yes, ma'am.
What are your thoughts?
Well, from what you said, I would be very disappointed if I went to say something, if I was one of her constituents, and she didn't really take me or the group seriously. Mm-hmm. And point a finger gun, I call it, at somebody when they're finished speaking just shows a lack of, it's just disrespectful, I think.
Okay.
And if she had that kind of attitude toward her constituents, you know, I'd have to get another city councilman myself.
Okay. Let me weigh in. I actually live in District 9. And I'm more familiar with Elizabeth's prior history. My grade isn't going to be better than the other gentleman that just spoke. And this is actually because the topic is all the council members and the mayor wanting to get a raise, those behaviors that were described are accurate. And I've seen that in a couple of situations where I actually helped my councilwoman out and, you know, on the issues that were important to her and to our district and the city, and just got disrespect in return. And this is my analysis, is she's a military veteran. You got to respect that. She's also an attorney and a single mom, but her behavior and the council's behavior as a whole is reflective of the culture that they're creating, because the new members of the council have a permission slip to misbehave, because the veteran, that happens to be Bob Willoughby's councilwoman, she shows up. I mean, you know, Bob's tough to, you know, I mean, he's pretty rough and abrasive and direct. I agree with him on a lot of stuff. However, that doesn't merit his councilwoman and the other council members to take turns taunting, insulting, and making comments. You know, what's funny is they even get the insults in when they're not supposed to respond at all during the general public comment. And so on that variable there, I'm really disappointed in Elizabeth Beck and a number of the other council members. But additionally, she has the capacity. She wouldn't have got through law school if she didn't, to be more professional and mature. And the other thing is that Fernando Peralta was her opponent in the runoff. And, and across the board, a stronger public servant heart and mindset. If you were going to replace Ann Zeta with a person of color, you couldn't do much better than Fernando. And so there's that part of it. But also, I mean, and he's younger than she is, and we can go on and on about that. But what I see is she made that kind of snide comment to one of the other guys about, well, it's your first time. The Southwest Fort Worth and Southwest Tarrant County community has invested nearly $2 million in her to get her elected to something. If you think about it that way, she raised more money than anyone except the mayor's race to win the race she won for city council. And when she ran for the House district against Craig Goldman, the Jewish community that she's a member of and the greater community as a whole raised, I think, $1 million plus for her. And and so, you know, I mean, this is kind of a proving ground. And the truth is she doesn't look like she's material to remain as a city councilwoman, far less to serve at a higher level. That whatever grade you want to make that, call it a D minus or an F, or, you know, the thing is that the culture on that in this new city council is a reflection of the top, the leadership, and how the mayor conducts the city council meetings. Because the chairman of a meeting like that is supposed to call the other members to task when they're inappropriate or unprofessional. Instead, Maddie Parker jumped right in on it. And so that's where your problem is you know, they've created a clique of nine people, whether they're there for, you know, several months or 3 or 4 years, where they've given each other a mutual permission slip to act up or be inappropriate or unprofessional. I mean, some of the things they do by statute are probably violations. You're going to get all nuanced about that. But the reality is, you know, I don't think the people in District 9 are going to be very patient with her, given that we have other choices. So
I see that coming as well. Y'all, we're going to move on. And as well as we see you on the line, we're just trying to get a little ways down the road before we take callers. But we do see you on the line, and we are going to get to you. Let's talk about District 8. Chris Nettles is my council person. We know that he's a father. We know that he's a business owner of the Haven of Purpose Child Care Center. We know that basically, you know, he's a pastor. He's got church. But I'm pausing because I'm trying to be very careful with my words. One thing I noticed is that I personally asked for a meeting with the pastor with the pastor about a situation that I was having with police harassment. And basically the pastor, Reverend Mr. Nettles, he gave me his assistant. And the assistant, I mean, she's new to her job. And basically I gave them a full complaint of my issue. I never heard from my council person, but I see Chris in large amounts of photo ops, you know, ribbon cuttings, every dance, every social event, but you can't get him in his office on the phone to answer an issue with police harassment. So I have a problem with that. I have a problem with my MPO. I've made it very clear. I laid out everything. Nothing. I was told to talk to Kim Neal. In my opinion, from what I'm understanding, talking to the Oversight Committee is basically like pissing in the wind, because the Oversight Committee has no authority to make a police officer even come before them. They have no authority to, you know, hand down a reprimand, and they also do not put that on the officer's record. Well, at least if you go to IAD, you know nothing's going to happen, but you do know it's going to go permanently on the officer's record. So for that, you know, my counsel person, I have a problem with. And I have a problem with the fact that he and Elizabeth Beck, like I said, obviously do not know that the cameras are watching them. And they appear, in my opinion, maybe it's not happening, but it appears that they make fun of people as people leave the podium. We don't want to see that. We want to believe that we put professional people up in there in those offices that have enough common sense to realize that they're representing a whole district, and we expect professionalism from them. It's that simple. Adrian, I know that you are friends with Chris. Do you disagree?
Let's we're gonna put that relationship into perspective for everyone who's listening. He just we served as I know him personally. I could say he's a friend, but he's not a, you know, somebody that you talk to on, you know, on a regular. We just served together through the organization I work with, football organization, this, that, or the other. But with that being said, I would say this: if you can take your put yourself in a position of service and jump out and be the voice for police wrongdoing for a situation for a young lady whose life was taken, you know what I'm saying? With reckless abandonment, you know what I'm saying? If I'm using the right word for that, for Miss Tatiana Jefferson, if you can put yourself out. Try to be the voice. Try to be the whatever the out front like that. You should be able to do that for somebody else who's still, she's no longer living, but you still got somebody who is living, who's dealing with, you know what I'm saying. So you should be able to use that, have that same consideration and that same servitude to want to see what's going on. If you're about police and reform, this, that, or the other, then that's where I'm going with that, because if you're about police and reform, or you know. Don't just use a situation that got everybody's attention. Use a situation that don't have everybody's attention. And this doesn't, your situation doesn't have everybody's attention. Only you know about it, and I know about it, and whoever you shared it with know about it. But come on, that's where I'm going with that. But I would say, as far as Mr. Nettles, I just hope he hasn't been compromised, because he started off one way. What is possibility? Some wrangling is going on, and They have gotten to him. So I want to see if he's going to be that same Chris that he was when he was, who he was on that campaign, when he was speaking out against everything, when he was standing with the people. That's the Chris I want to see. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You on that council now. Let me see if you're willing to buck the council now that you're amongst the council. That's the Chris I want to see. So I'm going to give Mr. Chris Nettles, he's going to have to take a grade of a, I give him a D-.
I'm just saying. Mr.
Trolling Cousin. Well, my input isn't very much different than on Elizabeth Beck, not just because they happen to sit side by side. Their politics are pretty progressive, liberal. But here's the thing. The gentleman that just spoke, he is absolutely 100% correct. And what I've seen here, because I care a lot about police reform and proactive plans to make the situation different moving forward, make the training different, make the accountability different, et cetera. And what it looks like is a complete kick the can down the road strategy, not just by Mr. Nettles, but especially by him, because he's supposed to be the advocate that got elected on this issue specifically. And so none of them want to be proactive. They just want to wait and react after the Tatiana Jefferson trial takes place. Well, that's a horrible strategy for a bunch of reasons, because I can tell you that the police department and David Cook and others, you know what they're focused on? They're focused on the assumption that riots or unrest will happen and being prepared for that. Instead of what is the plan, even if it'll take a while to roll it out, to reform and revolutionize the region. They're not even making an effort at that. It's like the city has convinced them that they have to wait on all that because of liability. And that's a game that co-ops brand new city council members like Mr. Nettles. So
I agree.
I agree.
Pastor Chris.
Yes, ma'am.
Your thoughts?
I agree with the two gentlemen. I think Chris, you know, I know him. I think he's a fine young man, but, you know, I think he's gotten stuck in the lion's den, and he's made an made an agreement with the Lions. That's all I can say.
Wow. Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Footwork, and I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight's topic is, should our mayor and city council get huge pay raises with being on the job less than 1 year? And some people believe the job performances have been less than above average. If you'd like to join the conversation tonight, the number to call is 515-605-9321, and then press 1. Again, does the mayor and city council deserve a huge pay raise, and do they consider the people in their decision-making? We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 817-939. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hi, y'all. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, this is Stephanie Boardingham, and Stephanie. I wanted to tune in about the council and mayor getting paid. My opinion is that anytime funding is taken from the city, from the community, that it should go on a ballot and it should be approved or disapproved by the citizens. It's very easy for council to get up there and think that they deserve more pay. But it's always the bottom line is for the citizens to make that final decision.
Well, I understand it's on the agenda for next Tuesday to be put on the May ballot. But the problem is they have been on the job less than 1 year. I mean, really, we're under 8 months right now. And nobody has done an excellent job or even really above average job in many instances, the people believe that this particular mayor and council have adjusted everything in the city government to fit their schedules. And that's not what we hired them for. We didn't hire people to come in and jack up the pay raises for themselves, do less work, and not listen to the people. That's not what we voted for, and I know they know that, but that's not what we're getting.
I agree with that. And sometimes they show face early. So this is a way that they're showing exactly what's on their agenda versus the citizens that stand before them and have their issues and complaints. As you were talking earlier, we have citizens that walk up to the podium that have true concerns that they can't reach their council person. They can't talk to the police chief. They can't talk to the city manager. So their last resort is to stand before the council. And when they stand before the council and the council, you can tell their minds are elsewhere or they're not, they don't understand the concern of the people. And then they go and want to get pay raises. That just shows a reflection of who they are, and that makes the citizens wake up and realize on the next election what is really the choice we need to make. Do we need to change who we have on there, or do we keep who we have on there?
Excellent point. Thank you for calling in tonight, Stephanie. That is absolutely true, y'all. We're going to go to 903-802. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Yes, ma'am. How are you doing? So I want to kind of speak on the Elizabeth Beck thing because, you know, I was part of the people that spoke on that, you know, about the Nota Vendo, Hempel, Nota Vende, you know, how she just disregarded us. I mean, pretty much everybody voted unanimously to get that 1 to 2 bedroom, you know, low-income apartment. Well, we know I'm Honduran, so I got some Honduran in me. Most people that are Hispanic have over 2 to 3 kids, or they have a whole slew of family members that live together because it's just cheaper that way. And sometimes it's just like that, you know, in the culture. And to sit there and, you know, and think it's all, you know, it's okay to disregard, you know, having a conversation with them.
Let me ask you this.
So it was good. And then let's, let's talk about David Cook. Now, David Cook, you know, making all the money he did off of the Panther Island ordeal, and then not only that, the $300,000 he makes now, which is insane. But then, you know, when I look at Maddie Parker and what she's done in 8 months, she hasn't done anything, nothing.
Mm-hmm. Let me be clear on those apartments that were going over in Hemphill. What was the issue that the majority of the people were coming down there and complaining about with those apartments that were going in Hemphill?
They were worried about taxes going up and then eminent domain being used as a means to overreach, you know, which they're going to eventually do. You know, when they want to build an extension, you know, into the neighborhood, you know, so like now they're going to force you to sell your house, and if you don't, they'll put you in litigation until two things, either do or they vote, you know, for it. You know, they'll say, hey, this housing is for the betterment of the community, and then, you know, here we are in court, and then, you know, either they're going to sell and lose their grandma's house or grandpa's house or their house that they, you know, that they have worked so hard for. And that was the biggest concern, was is not hearing from the people. Like, she didn't even show up to the video showing that they had, a little movie night they had at Caps Park. I was there, you know, and to see what their concern was and talked with, you know, some of the leaders there. And I was like, wow. So I went and spoke and said, hey, if the people say they don't want it, they don't need it, you need to sit down and find out why. If they just say they flat out don't want it, so be it.
Okay. So these were not low-income apartments, as I misspoke. They were luxury apartments.
No, they're low-income apartments, but 1 to 2 bedrooms is not going to, in that neighborhood, especially in the south side of Hemphill, you know, over there in that area, Hemphill, Berry and all that, it's not, there's really no beneficial into it.
Gotcha. That's what I needed to know. Thank you
right.
so
and,
much
and
for
then, you know,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and, you know, just, you know, I've seen the way Chris Nettles and Beach, I mean, really, it's the whole, you know, the whole city council. It's like, look, you know, at some point in time, somebody's got to say, hey, we're going to treat the citizens of Fort Worth like, you know, just like the citizens and people. We're going to treat them with respect, not the way you're treating them. If you're going to do that, don't get mad, you know, when the personnel issues start coming out. I mean,
that's
act fine. Like you got some sense, and you're right about Nettles. I mean, it's the same thing for Flores. You're going to see Flores, which is my city council guy. You know what you're going to see out of him? Photo op, photo op, photo op. I'm going to go here and there. But when stuff needs to get fixed, good luck with that.
We're getting to him, trust me. Thank you so much for calling in tonight. That's Trevor Booker running for Tarrant County Judge. Y'all need to watch for him on the ballot. We're going to go to 817-378. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
I think, you know, this Brother Malik, I think, you know, these people that take these seats are to serve the public. Their job is to provide good jobs, good schools, and keep your taxes low. Somehow or another, this bunch right here and the prior bunch have forgotten the primary basis of holding city office, is that they have forgotten what their jobs are, and it's up to everybody to put pressure on them to make sure they get back in tune. I mean, we can do, as far as that Hemphill area, I worked over there. I know what's going over there. What that group of people are saying, some of them houses over there are worth $250,000.
Wow.
Good day. Oh, yeah. Part of that is part of that historic district over there. And what they saying is, I'm not going to be paying no $6,000-$7,000 on my taxes. And you go 2 blocks over, you know, the other residents are paying $800. They ain't gonna fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just how, you know, that's what they call, their new word is revitalization. And, you know, that's kind of tough when you have that strong wave of that type of houses that, you know, that's worth that type of money. And, you know, everybody's not in tune with what's going on when it comes to change. But, you know, that's pretty much, and that's been going on. Like I said, I worked on the West 7 project. I know what's happening with this city. You know, it is what it is. But as far as our councilman, you know, I don't know what they're doing. You know, they're getting in bed with the wrong people. Some of them controlled by, you know, the powers that be, and that's just how they choose to do their business. But
that's
know
exactly
it,
what they promised us they would not do.
But see, that's where we step in. You know, I didn't have some conversations with them, and trust and believe, we got a plan for them. Huh. Don't do what you say, one and done. I don't care who you are. You one and done with us. Don't let that part go up like I wanted to in Highland Hills. You out of there, buddy.
But see,
and trust and believe.
Election,
and trust and believe. And trust and believe, my neighborhood is in an empowerment zone. And so ain't nowhere in the world that Carmo got a rec center looking like it's looking, and my neighborhood don't look like it's supposed to look. They ain't going to fly with me. So I'm going to do my job. You don't do what I say, dude, I'm going to get you up out of there.
And so the thing is, you know, as unfortunate as it is, you know, everybody said flip downtown because, you know, what we had in there last time wasn't right. And now we put in almost a 100% new council, and this council gets in there, and I don't know, it's like they lost their minds. It's like they don't even look at what the people want. It appears to me that the way they do things is to make them comfortable. Their schedule needs to be more flexible so that they, you know, a lot of them have children. They had children coming to the, you know, in terms of a raise, they knew what the rate of pay was when they took the job. And so it seems to me that they're coming in and they're absolutely trying to change everything about the office. And that's not what we put them in place to do. That part. Thank you, Malik, for calling tonight. Y'all, we're going to talk about Mr. Firestone. Mr. Firestone, a husband, father of four, between the ages of 8 and 14. He's a business owner of Firestone and Robertson Distilling Company. They deal with Texas whiskey. You know, when I see Mr. Firestone, I do see a level of professionalism. He does, even though he's sitting right next to Chris Nettles and Elizabeth Beck doing all the giggling. I don't see that with him. He does appear to be focused. However, I don't see anything that stands out about him. I don't see him ever voting against the block. I call it what they have up there now, a voting block. I don't see him ever voting against anything. Every now and again, he will ask for a postponement, but you know, in terms of what I see in him, I see average, and that he just goes along to get along. Troll and Kazi, would you agree with that?
Well, I agree with everything you said. One thing I have observed, and it's the quiet form of service, is, and by the way, politically, I don't agree with him on a whole lot of stuff. He's pretty conservative. However, as far as constituent services, we're actually advocating for things. I could give several examples, but I'll give one. At one of the recent public comment sessions, he rallied some of his constituents in far north Fort Worth in those neighborhoods that are waiting for road improvements, you know, those feeder roads where all the accidents. The woman came and spoke about her two teenage sons being killed. Mr. Firestone at least does things proactively that are in the interests of constituents living and voting in this space. And there may be a situation where some of the others do that, but I will say for a guy that just walked in the door, he got out there after that part of it. We may not know those folks, but he is doing that aspect of it, and he hasn't been as immature as some of the other members. So I would give him like a C+. I mean, we're not talking A+ here.
No.
So.
I agree. Adrian.
I would say based on – I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can.
Carrie? No, I would say this. I haven't, like the other gentleman on the panel. He's taking on a district that the last council member – I think the last council member, I thought he was fun. He was a funny guy. I kind of liked – I liked him out of all council members. The last – I forgot his name. He was such a – I forgot his name, but you know what I'm talking about. The one who Mr. Firestone.
Was that Singleton? Was it Singleton or?
Yeah, Singleton. Yeah, he was. He was a funny one. But I would say that Mr. Firestone. I think he might be the. I think he's the elder statesman. He might be the elder. Mm-hmm. I would say that from what I've observed, he's more reserved, you know, and I think he's still trying to find his footing, you know, trying to find his place, get an understanding for things, for how they work. But like the gentleman said, if his accolade states businessman and, you know, this, that, or the other, he has some understanding of what needs to be done. And I would like to see him, like you say, just not going along just to get along, because I hate seeing that when they vote, they're green, everything just green. I hate with any of them. Nobody, you mean to tell me nobody says no for nothing? But Mr. Firestone, I have to rate him because nobody's going to get an A or A plus. So I give Mr. Firestone, because I don't know much about him. And I think that district does need a lot of, it's a lot going on in that district, a lot. I'll give him a C minus. I'll give Mr. Firestone just a C. I'm going to just give him a C. I got to see more. I haven't,
C
just observation.
A C for C more. We need to see more.
Okay, we'll go with that. Got that.
Yeah, Pastor Chris.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you familiar with
that? No, I'm here. I'd say about a C.
And we ain't picking on nobody else. We just been paying attention. We woke and we're paying attention. We're going to move on to Jared Williams, Dr. Jared Williams. He has a doctorate in environmental science and science education. He's the youngest councilman ever in the history of Fort Worth. We get that. I understand he's highly intelligent to the point that they consider him nerdy. He's so intelligent. Now and then I'll see him ask for a postponement on an issue that he needs to know more information about. But even with all of that, he doesn't stand out. He doesn't stand out as an independent thinker, even though they say he's highly intelligent. You never see him go against any of the votes. It's always he votes with the block. So even with all of his intelligence, I still see Jared Williams as an average. He's a C. We need to see more. And that's just how I see it. Would you say the same, Adrian?
I would give Mr. Jared Williams a C as well, and I would just say he conducts himself professionally. You know, I have observed that about him. He does conduct himself professionally. He's engaged with his constituents. He has things going on, but in his fight, his district fight was a doozy. You know, because he etched that old boy, the Grinch. The Grinch of Fort Worth, I'm going to just give him the name, the Grinch of Fort Worth. He etched him out by just so many votes. You know what I'm saying? That last guy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I think Mr. Williams, we need to see more from him. I think the district, the constituents of his district needs to light that fire. And don't let him get comfortable, because he probably can be swayed. You know, he probably could be swayed, or, you know what I'm saying? He probably could be swayed if he's not careful, you know, if he's not a, you know what I'm saying? Intelligence doesn't always mean, you know, accolades and all that doesn't always mean you the one. We need to see action over all your accomplishments. We need to see action. So I give him a C like it is.
I agree. Pastor Chris.
See, you know, like, I'm in agreement. I haven't seen really much from the whole city council. So, you know, if he's done all that they say he's done, I'd say a C.
Colin Causey.
Well, I agree with the C score. I think that his district, given how tough his race was to win, his district is probably the most divided 50-50, not just in terms of demographics, but politics. So he has to walk a fine line on how to get reelected, even though none of them should have that as their focus. So I think he's trying to figure out how to make everybody happy.
I agree.
And so you see him championing issues that are pro-police and pro-firefighter and kids and all that kind of PR stuff. And I think that he's pretty studious. Honestly, I've talked to the young man that's his assistant. And I just do not see, I mean, I have a nephew that's 19 years old. I just do not see an 18, 19-year-old having the wherewithal or the sophistication to deal with what I call the palace intrigue. And that is those 20 and 30-year veterans that are the upper assistant city managers and the city manager. I don't think that you have the maturity chops to recognize when they're, you know, giving you a snow job. And so, you know, I think the biggest mistake that he's made is in relying on somebody so young and so inexperienced to do a lot of his, you know, running around stuff, because it's just so vulnerable for getting snookered, basically. But I like him. I mean, I think that he can probably grow and improve. So those are pluses. But it's going to be hard for anybody to hold that seat. Unless in redistricting, Cuomo moves into that district and he does a better job than Michael Crane at serving Cuomo, that's where he needs to start getting good at you know, public service.
So. I think by far he's the more likable one of everybody. And when I say that, I think Firestone may be likable, but he just has a very flat personality. So you know, very dry personality. So he seems hard to read. So I'm going to say, you know, Jerry seems to be the more likable of the council members thus far, from what I can tell. But time will tell. We're going to go back to the phone lines. 817-446. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Good evening.
Good evening. Did you call me, Carrie?
We did.
Okay. I don't know my last four numbers, my phone number. I mean, I have my name in the back of my shirt, you know, and my address. When they find me wandering around with it, send me to. So I had to catch me for there. Yeah. So, yeah, I was going to, I was popping in because I was hearing y'all trying to figure the name of the council member. Dennis is one y'all were talking about. I don't know if you got the name or not. I think that's when you're talking about the funny council member that was in
Singleton.
Dennis. Singleton.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Dennis. Yeah. And, when I pulled up all their expenditures for 3 years, I wanted to see how much money they were spending. That's not campaign funds. It's expenditures. Dennis had the best record, but about $20,000. All the other ones were hitting around $80,000 or more, and Dennis is around $50,000. And I don't know why, but if I was a council member, I'd want to see what he was doing, because that's the ideal, is to save the taxpayers money, to get the most and use the less. But and also, Carlos, looking at his in District 2, or Sal, maybe I got him kind of ready. One of his in before Carlos there, Sal. Now, he had the highest phone bill. Everybody, the highest one besides his was in around $3,000 a year. His was around $8,000 a year. He was the only councilman who had an $8,000 a year phone bill. And we was making some jokes. He was calling those by the minute numbers. But I don't know. He might have got caught because he went down $1,000 this year. So I don't know for sure about that. And don't quote me on that. I'm just guessing. You know, we know they're all nice people, good people up there. So, but anyway, but yeah, I was just tuning in. I'm enjoying the show and listening to y'all talk about this, the ratings and that. And I'm afraid I'd even give them a lower. I think y'all being awful generous to them. You know,
really?
Maddie Parker, you know, she took away our rights to speak and now she wants a raise. I mean, that's just those two there. I mean, how do you take away the rights to speak and turn around and give me more money? So I don't understand that. But anyway, I'm enjoying that. And I'm hoping that some people pay attention to the agenda Tuesday night, because that's when they put this on, and this is what I got a problem with. There's 13 propositions, for one thing. That's too many at one time for people that really study. They do this. They cram them on. That way they get others to slide through. But these 13 propositions, before they put on the agenda, there should have been a task force put together first and have a meeting just like they're doing right now. We've got another task force going to go about redistricting. It's coming to Martin Luther King Center and some other places on the redistricting. And last time we did we did have a task force before we put things on the charter. I mean, for the ballot, for the charter amending. But anyway, I think they will have a task force, but they're going to do it after it's on the agenda, and that's kind of late. We need it before then, so we can decide whether or not we want those 13 things on the ballot. Because all you get to say on Tuesday now, do you want all 13 or do you want none? Really, is what you get to say at the end. What I'm saying is they need to pull it back off. Do a task force, take it around to the, like Martin Luther King Center in different areas around the city, and let everybody know what 13 propositions, and let us question them about them, and let us decide. And the ones that we think should go on the ballot, then put that on the agenda, pass it through the, which will pass, because we've already talked about it. You put it on the ballot, it'll probably pass again. But then the rest, a lot more people will know. But anyway, I'm just saying they're doing it the wrong way. These things on that Tuesday night agenda, they're on too early. We should have been notified. We should be able to discuss these and talk these. And that's why I really have a problem with it.
Let me say this. Okay, so Tuesday night, you know, this is on the agenda about the raise. They have not put specific numbers on here. So anybody who's looking at this is probably thinking, oh, they probably want a 3% raise or whatever if they're not paying close attention or they don't know the numbers. I have to actually go over and look at the numbers to determine what kind of money are we really talking about. So to me, to even have it on the agenda without being specific about what the amount is, to me is somewhat being deceptive or being a little bit deceptive in what we're actually talking about, if that makes sense. Because we're not talking about 3% raises across the board like most jobs. These numbers, let me give y'all an example of what I'm talking about. Let's just say Maddie Parker is asking for, let me be clear on what she's asking for. She's asking for...
It's 50% of all the top directors paid on average. Almost half
of the average base rate salary for a city department head. Well, I went over and looked at some of the city department heads and what they were making. And let me just give you an idea. The city property manager director makes $173,000. The aviation director makes $213,800. The business process manager, $156,000. The chief financial services officer, $227,000. And the code compliance director, $213,000. The average I saw for these directors was about $213,000. So I guess I'm not sure. Is Maddie Parker asking for a half of $213,000? Is she asking her pay to go from $29,000 to half of $213,000, which would be about $106,000, right?
There you go. I was going to say you got it wrong. No, she wants $206,000.
No, that's $106,000.
Yeah.
$106,000.
Yeah. $106,000. That's right. Yeah, she wants $100,000. Raise with what she gets under the table now. She's just not happy.
Oh.
No, I don't know. You know, she's probably making a lot more money back working in the system, you know, and she's trying to make sure she makes up all that. But I don't know. It's like you said earlier, Terry, she's got a family and everything. She's just not fit for this job. You know, I wouldn't hire her no more as a mayor as I would to have her pour a concrete slab for my house. You know, she don't fit for either job.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it's just people aren't fit for certain jobs, you know,
yeah.
And some are. And she's just not, she's not fit for this job, period. I don't think she is, or at least that's my opinion.
We haven't got to her yet. Bob, thank you for calling.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
just rewrite that.
But that's okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bob, for jumping in tonight. Y'all, it's a lot going on, and I just think we need to pay close attention to where we're at and what they're asking for. Because to go, I don't know a job where you can be on the job less than 8 months and go to your boss and say, I want a raise and I want to go from $29,000 to $106,000 and have an average or below average job performance. Where do they do that at?
Government.
Wait, where?
Government.
Government, or something. Or something. Yeah, let's talk about Gina Bivens. And I have spoken with Gina Bivens many times, and Ms. Bivens, if you happen to come across this tape, this ain't personal. We know that, you know, she's also Mayor Pro Tem. And I'd like to say, Ms. Bivens, I like you better as a council person than I do as Mayor Pro Tem. And I say that because it seems like you take on a different personality when you become Mayor Pro Tem. I think you have been almost mean-spirited when you sit in that seat. And I say that I don't know Treece Jones personally. I've seen her on social media and on the news and other things, but I don't know her personally. But I know recently she went down before city council, I think about the Tatiana Jefferson situation. And Treece Jones went past her time limit. And Gina Bivens very quickly told the marshal to take her out. And as Therese Jones was telling them, don't touch me, or something like that, they got her to the point of the door, and Therese Jones said, no justice. And Gina Bivens replied, no peace. And then Therese Jones replied, I've been thrown out of better places than this. And Gina Bivens replied, I bet you have. Madam Mayor Pro Tem, that is not a behavior that we want to see from you. We know you're better than that, and we expect better from you. And I just thought that lacked something for me. And like I said, I don't know Therese Jones personally, but I just thought asking the marshals to step in and remove her and then to make those comments, I just thought Gina was better than that. You're a senior member of that council, and you should be the example. And so we, as a people, we see these things. And so tonight, I'm just asking that we see better from you. So that bothers me when I see our council person acting like that. And I don't like the second thing, her silence on police issues. We know that the Police Officers Association gives to her campaign, and I don't like the fact that she goes silent when you have a police issue. Now, those are my statements on Ms. Bivens. And so, you know, I find her at a C at best for those things. Thomas, what are your thoughts?
Well, on this particular council member, I agree on everything you said. It's easy to do that. She does take on authoritarian trappings as soon as she has the opportunity. And I actually think that this goes to a deeper problem, which is you wonder why these council members flip and get in there in a few months. Part of their acclimation and the acculturation of get the job when they train them on the logistics, mm-hmm. they start to build the culture of fear in the council members. Mm-hmm. The police department and the marshal service and the city staff, as soon as they can, convince the council that the public is the enemy, that the people that are there to speak are dangerous, that they can't engage them in the pit before or after the meeting. And I mean, my one experience with Gina Bivens that was most negative happened pretty recently. She was going to be chairing the council one night because, of course, Maddie Parker wasn't there. And the marshals were sent downstairs to the front door to stop me and call me by name and give me a lecture on not using a whistle because they claimed, and this is still cops, this is law enforcement. So I don't know what the facts are on who said what first, but it was clear that they name-dropped Gina Bivens, who said that they said, she asked us to come talk to you and tell you you would be arrested for disorderly conduct if you use a whistle in the city council. Now, the first reality is I'm 61 years old. I've never been a problem in the city council chambers, but this puts a chill on free speech. The second thing is why are you singling anybody out when they're walking in the front door, you know? And so since then, I realized that, you know, some of the folks that get elected, they like the authoritarian thing. So your concerns about her not speaking out against police or police reform is because she's that level of pro-police. She looked at the – so legally and under Texas state statute, the mayor pro tem has no authority over law enforcement. That's not the role of licensed law enforcement. The only reason why the law enforcement officers, whether it's Fort Worth PD or the marshals, should get involved is if they personally observe someone committing a criminal offense. That's why they're law enforcement. And so they're not bodyguards or pit bulls or whatever. But I can see, because I can say, for example, Marshall Parks, it is his personally appointed role to get in Gina Bivens' ear and to cause trouble. And so that's real troubling. And the other thing about this is like I always say, I don't agree with Bob on everything, but Bob is one of her constituents. Whether he was her political opponent in the past or not, what does that say to all of her political opponents, I mean, all of her constituents, the way that she's the ringleader in the disrespect and abuse. And I think that's horrible. And I think that my councilwoman and the others, the newer folks, have all gotten the permission slip to jump on board. So, I mean, on that, I think that classless, I think she's the oldest council member. And I think it's really immature.
You know what? I'm going to open back up Bob's phone line. I'm going to ask Bob. Bob told me about a meeting, and somebody confirmed it. So somebody else was there and told me it happened just like Bob said it happened. Bob, tell us about when you went to a meeting, and was it in District 4 when you were kicked out of the meeting? Bob Willoughby. Bob Willoughby. I wish he could tell us. I think he went to a meeting in District 4, and some kind of way he left out of the meeting because the meeting hadn't started. And then the person who owned the venue said, you can't come back in because I own this. This is private property, and you can't come back in. And this was a meeting that Gina Bivens was holding, I want to say, in Kerry Moon's district. Bob, are you there? Okay, Bob's not paying attention right now. Okay, I'm going to close his phone line and back up. But that one I thought was very strange. And somebody else was telling me a story about that particular meeting and basically recanted it just as Bob had done. And I'm with you, Thomas. If you're a city council person, Gina Bivens or anyone else, you represent the entire district. And you should not treat anyone differently than the other, even if they annoy you, even, you know, if they ask the tough questions that you don't want to answer. It's part of your job, and we just expect more. Pastor Chris, would you agree with that?
I would. And another thing I just wanted to say, I was at a meeting, and they were going over how much money the POA had paid, you know, had paid candidates, and guess who was number one?
Gina Bivens.
Yep.
She's not gonna say anything about police.
Pardon me?
Yeah. She's not gonna say anything about the police.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about it, you know, when that Tatiana Jefferson thing happened, Chris had to get elected to write a letter about why they're taking it so long.
Mhm. Hmm. But then he got a gag order for writing that letter, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
See, there's an example. That's an example where the lawyers and the staff convince incoming elected officials. This happens at city council and at other boards too. They convince them that their fiduciary duty, which is really more financial, their first level of loyalty is to the entity and not to the voters or the people. And with a lot of legalese, so they flip because they're afraid not just to get censured or reprimanded by the others, but they're convinced that if they do anything that's righteous or proactive in the best interest of the whole city or their own constituents or a special case when it's an individual's need, that it may raise the liability of the city. So it's like a muzzle. And that's why nothing's happened with police reform or even movement in that direction, because they've convinced all nine of them that you cannot say anything until the Tatiana Jefferson trial's over. The problem with that is there's always going to be something like that in the pipeline until change happens. There's always going to be police abuse, and I mean, another unnecessary death or abuse or a false arrest or whatever. It's too big of a city not to be working on it now and speaking out now. But
you know,
I'm telling you, it's not brainwashing, but it is acculturation.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom.
That's all right. I mean, I don't want to go on about some of the other boards or councils in the county, but that's exactly what they do. And they build fear, actual physical and personal fear between them and their constituents. Then they build fear of lawsuit and financial costs. Then they build fear of censure or reprimand amongst their peers. they immediately start looking at it like it's us against them. And I mean, it's terrible, but I mean, that's the best explanation, whether you're talking about the number 9 seed or the number 2 seed is, you know, they did. Yeah. And all of the socialization to make all 9 of them like each other and to hang out with each other's kids. Of course we want them to get along. Of course we want them to, respect each other. But
yeah, that is definitely the. Let me try Bob Willoughby one more time so he can. Bob Willoughby, are you there? Bob Willoughby is doing something else. Okay, I just wanted him to recant this story. Adrian, what are your thoughts?
Hey, Viv is going to get a D with me. She's going to get a D, and I'm going to put a circle around it. You know how they. So the teacher lets you see what you get, and she put a circle around it. She don't just put your grade on, she put a circle around so you can see the D. I think Miss Gina Bivens, she thank God for Bob. He's a thorn in her side, but for all the right reasons, because it's about accountability first and foremost. I think the constituents of her district, some have just letting her get a pass because of one, her ethnicity. She's an older lady serving. Her age, her ethnicity. She knows how to spool and woo people. She picks and chooses what she wants. Be for and against. She says she acts like she's the champion and a stop sticks. But let me tell you, Miss Gina Bivens, you don't need to. This is Miss Carrie's show. She has to do what she needs to do to keep her show going forward. But hey, I'm off script. So. You're not the champion of stop sticks. You're not the champion of stop sticks. You haven't done anything to stick your chest out like you doing this and doing that. Because what's happening for stop sticks, for Calvert Place, this, that, or the other, that area, all that development, I've seen several new properties be thrown up, probably owned properties be thrown up faster than what y'all talking about stop sticks. So what are y'all waiting on? Stop sticks is. Y'all don't move. They don't move the people out. Y'all don't move the people out. Y'all don't demolish everything. But I've seen several properties. I've seen several properties thrown up since they've been championing by Stop Six for the last 10, 12 years. And the other side of Trinity, the Trinity River, that's where all the development and the houses are. Oh, I'm sure you champion for those people more than you do for the people in your immediate district. But hey, I'm not in your district. I guess I might just be talking, but. No, I'm not just talking. It is what I see. It's what my heart tells me. Your time is the clock is ticking for you, Ms. Bivens. The clock is ticking for you. I'm letting you know. The voter wave. You got caught up in it last year. You just happened to paddle your way out somehow. Somebody threw you a life preserve. But the clock is ticking for you, ma'am.
I would say to Ms. Bivens, and Zena, it's not personal, okay? We've talked in before, we've disagreed, we've agreed on things. But I'm going to say this. Gina, I don't think it's fair to have a meeting for your district, out of your district, on private property, and then throw a constituent out. That was wrong, and we, again, expect better from you. All right, y'all, moving on to Mr. Kerry Moon. He was in the news recently. He's in District 4. We know Mr. Moon had a DUI, he didn't finish the probation for the DUI, which wasn't good. We know that Mr. Moon is a husband. We know that he's a father of 2 daughters. He's a business owner. Been on the council since 2015. He states, now this is the crazy part, he states his office expects government transparency, efficiencies in our government, and open communication for the neighbors he represents. You got some work to do, Mr. Moon. He's the chief executive officer. The chief executive officer of a community bank. He was the CFO of a medical company, president and CEO of Moon Financial, Inc. He has a portfolio of businesses and real estate entities throughout DFW. Okay, that's Kerry Moon. But let's talk about your job performance, Mr. Moon. As a council person, you are average at best. I think you definitely vote along with the group. Nothing ever stands out about the way you do your job. You currently are seeking to go to the state legislature. and the people will decide that. But as a council person, I think you let us down with failing the probation of the DUI. I think even your behavior during the arrest was not gentlemanlike. You gave an air of arrogance to the officers when you told them that you were the police, or you were the mayor of Fort Worth. I thought that you almost appeared to be asking for special favors when you told them, "Do you know who I am?" So for that, I think you have failed us as a council person. And that's just my personal opinion. Pastor Chris, what are your thoughts?
I think because of the DUI, that just kind of detracts from him being a good council member.
I would say this, we all make mistakes. And back in the day, and I've never been somebody who was a huge drinker, but I've been drunk twice in my life, but it never made me arrogant. In fact, it made me humble. And it wasn't something that I ever thought I should get out on the street and drive when I was under the influence. I don't drink now at all, but I'm not putting anybody down who struggles with alcohol, because I know it is an addiction. That's not the issue. The issue is that you had a probation to fulfill, and you did not do that. And so for that, that's very disappointing as a council person. Twirling Kazi, would you agree?
So I agree. And so full disclosure, my grandfather died because of a drunk driver before I was born. When my mother was 16. And one of my cousins separately, a grandson of that grandfather, also died by a drunk driver. You're right. People make mistakes. We all have our personal, histories and pasts. And we like redemption and forgiveness. The problem here isn't just the video, that the revelations from the video. And of course, he was drunk while he was saying those things. That's not an excuse. Here's where the problem is. At this stage, this person, who's supposed to be a role model for a lot of people, including his own household, is in denial of his circumstances, because it was reckless and foolish for him to be critical of the district court judge who gave him the probation in the first place. I mean, here he has violated his probation 3 or 4 times, and he publicly made, statements that no lawyer would want him to make when he's about to face a judge in a couple weeks with the possibility of his probation being extended or revoked. It's sad, but it's not, he's not in a place where he ought to be in a public service job. He's running for higher office. And here's the thing that a lot of you may not realize. He doesn't appear to be that effective as a city council member, but what he did do is he got in on all of the financial committees. And he knows the city budget and the spreadsheets and all of the allocations and disbursements better than anyone on the council, the previous council, and certainly the current one. So all of the things that are pet projects for him, or all of the things that conservatism doesn't care about, he has massive control over. There's probably 2 other council members on his committee with him, but he's chaired it the whole time. So when you see a measure on the city council agenda to be voted on, and it's an outlay for what, it doesn't matter if it's a social program or streets or whatever, when the language is vague and no one really knows what they're voting on, what's about to be passed or failed, it's Carrie Moon behind that. In other words, I'm giving you one example directly tied to that Tarrant Regional Water District. On this year's fiscal budget, there were 2 line items presented on a chart, and both of them said the exact words water and sewer improvements twice. One was for $27.5 million, and the other was for $29 million. But there was no other explanation. For example, well, what's the difference? Is it like for different districts, or is it for new developments expanding the city, or is it money for the Tarrant Regional Water District? It's that kind of vagueness that's slick that nobody notices. And so, like, he likes to correct people when they speak at the city council, and that happened to me. I had an opportunity to come back, luckily. Remember when the 10-year CCPD funding was passed and the police department has wads and wads of money, right?
Yep.
When I pointed out that a very small percentage of the population actually voted on that and that 10 years was too long for oversight, that's five city council sessions, he said, well, it won by 65% of the vote. I said, no, it won by 6.5% of the vote because only 10% of the voters showed up to vote, and the Police Officers Association, as usual, put out such outrageously fear-mongering ads that it scared enough people to vote for that fund, $800 million plus over 10 years. And so, you know, when it comes to the numbers, when it comes to what's going in making the sausage of politics, when it comes to the budget, right now that city council member has more influence and knowledge on how to torque it without us figuring out what's going on. And and so, and that's the issue there. And understand, I mean, and this guy, he's, I told Carrie about this before, he's part of what's called the Ross Volunteers, like a very elite Texas A&M group. I went to Texas A&M too. And he is personal friends with Maddie Parker's husband, who also was in the Ross Volunteers. This is this is a very unique network. Each year, there are only 21 of these guys at the whole university. And for 2 years, they served the 21 guys. I think 11 or 10 are juniors or seniors. The point is, they're also the personal honor guard for the governor of the state of Texas, not UT people. So they get to travel for 2 years with the governor, the Republican conservative governor, and they built their permanent network. Everybody that, so the, for that particular political persuasion, if you check, some of the most radically right people in the state that are running for office are members of the Ross Volunteers.
Wow.
And so there's a really right wing group called their publication is called Texas Scorecard, and Empower Texans, the Connie Burton group, and the Northeast Tarrant County, you know, the Tea Party Republican type group.
Mm-hmm.
It is led by a guy named Michael Quinn Sullivan. Okay. And Michael Quinn Sullivan and Carrie Moon were roommates in college and both in the Ross Volunteers. So these folks are like building a bench in a sports team in order, with the full expectation that if everything goes right, Carrie Moon's ambitions are to run for the House district and win it for one or two cycles and then run for Kay Granger's congressional seat. Of course, that's also Michael Crane's ambition, and that's also Maddie Parker's ambition.
Oh, my
God. So they don't really care. Yeah. They're sitting on the city council as a placeholder because they're expecting to step one or two more steps up the ladder at least.
What is your grade for him?
Well, I'd say if you're a conservative, white, upper middle class or richer constituent, you'd have to give him an A or an A+. If you are not those things, you should be really worried and give them a D-.
Whoa. Adrian.
Hey, Terry Moon, Mr. Kevin, I'm gonna hit it right on the nail. I'm gonna hit the nail right on the head. He gets the F minus with a circle over it, so he can see that the teacher gave him an F. Please go tell your parent. Please go tell your mother, your father, why you're failing. I will say another thing to Mr. Moon. One word. I'm gonna spell it out for him. U-B-E-R. U-B-E-R. That says Uber. Uber. The next time you find yourself in a in what's that word they use? Inebriated. Somebody help me out.
Where you
can't function, you can't think straight. I hope people around you are concerned about you. Someone will call you Uber and take your keys away so you can get to your destination. I think thirdly, he should have given himself some time. If he would have stepped away, show people that, it's one thing to say, X, Y, Z, Yeah, we all make mistakes, huh? I know people want to hear that. Oh, let me say that, Carrie, because I know people want to hear me say that. We all make mistakes. No, I'm not perfect. He's not perfect. So I said it so people can hear me. But, yeah, Mr. Moon's on for a higher position. He's not ready for it. You're not, sir. You have you need to just go ahead and finish out your term in this council. I think he know the wave was coming for him. He was I think he got on that same lifeboat Gina got on this last election. So he know the political wave is coming. I think he know he was on the chopping block. So he's trying to find a way out. So I don't see him moving up to the next level. I give anybody the benefit of the doubt. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I don't see him moving up to the next level. And I hope the organization MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, would take notice of this. And, they'll put out some kind of campaigns or some kind of, something to say, hey, we don't want you going to the next level. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You haven't, So that's it on me, on Mr. Moon.
Whoa. All I can say is, whoa. Yeah, we're going to move on to Michael Crane. But I'm going to go back to Bob Willoughby one more time, and he better be paying attention and so he can tell us the story. Bob, are you paying attention?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
You know what happened?
No.
You mentioned Gina Bivens, and I got kind of ill, and I had to go to the bathroom. No, I'm just kidding. I got the Gina Bivens. I couldn't take it. But no, I was listening on my laptop. I mean on the desktop, and I wasn't listening
okay.
by phone. And it's a few seconds behind. And you said let's go to Bob Willoughby. I picked up the phone. And I forgot. I'm a few seconds behind. Y'all done moved on.
So tell us this.
Yeah.
Tell us this about the meeting. And this is back to Gina because Bob. I wanted Bob to tell that story for some clarity because I didn't want to be the one to tell the story. He can tell it better than I can. You went to a meeting for your district, but it was in District 4, am I understanding that, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we were the only city council member that had her district. I mean, her town hall in a different district. When they were holding these town halls, everybody, and I'll give Elizabeth and a couple of them credit because they held two in their districts. Mm-hmm. And only a couple did. I can't remember who. But there was just a couple that did two in their district. I thought everybody should have done at least two, maybe three, get that to the people. But Gina didn't hold any in ours. She held it in District 4 because it's the only way that she was trying to figure out. She couldn't do it in ours, And that's what it did. It really also exposed the president of the Hanley Neighborhood Association, Judy Taylor, which was a good friend of mine for years, who I thought was a good friend of mine, who did support me sometimes off and on. I thought the way she talked about Gina, but now she's a Hanley Neighborhood Association president. Her picture is in that puzzle on that police station on Lancaster. They got on there by 820 Lancaster, the police station. They did a puzzle thing with people that are officers and, credit to the city. Her picture's in there. Well, after, what she did here was when Gina held hers over in District 4 by Newell Newell, Judy Taylor didn't speak out at all and say, why didn't you have it at our Hanley? We got a Hanley Community Center. It just spent millions of dollars remodifying it. And the first thing it says, the whole event's there. Why didn't the Neighborhood Association and Judy Taylor say, Gina, why are you over there? We're not in a Hanley one here. Why not here? Or why not in Martin Luther King? Or why not, somewhere in our district? Instead, the Neighborhood Association says, well, it don't matter where she has it, just as long as she has one. And I thought, that's great. She's as far away from the other end of the district. But anyway,
so
this showed her true colors.
Where was it held at?
It was at it's a private place over in Newell Newell. I forgot, I forgot place it was, but it's a private. And I went to it, went inside. And, me and Gina had a little bit of friendly words or whatever. But anyway, we had a little bit, and I went to the top and sat up top, and Gina said, come down here and sit down here lower. And I said, no, I want to say things I don't want to say. So I just sat up top, and I decided to go outside because it was still a little bit early and start working the crowd coming in. I like to work the crowd coming in saying, this should be over in District 5, and here's our card, here's our show, and that. And Gina, she came out a bit and started trying to usher people in. And then they went in, and it got slow. And also, I decided to go back in. And that's when I couldn't go back in. And they said, you couldn't go back in. I said, what? And I said, this is a town hall. And I can't. And they said, it's also on private property. And you can't go back in. So they locked me out.
What was the reason that they gave you that you couldn't go back in?
Well, I guess they said I was being disorderly or something. But I don't know what, you know. And but Dana, the assistant city manager over there, she was real nice. She knew what happened and that. And I talked to her with the inn outside. And well, a few people could hear us, too. And I was talking to Dana. And I said, Dana, can we hold two of these? I want to hold one at the Martin Luther King. Because District 5 did not get a town hall. Everyone got a town hall except District 5. And I said, Melinda Hamilton, she can be, you know, she can host it. And she was there, too, at this one. And that she could host it. And we had two places over in the south part of District 5, Hanley and Martin Luther King, and another one. I can't think of the name of it now, the U-Green or whatever center. And so Dana said, yeah, we can do that. So when I got the dates and I called and got them set up to do the town hall, Dana with the city manager says, no, I got to clear it with Gina. I got to contact. And I thought, oh, geez, it just went out the window when she said that. So Gina canceled our dates, and set up one. Go ahead.
Well, let me go back because we got to stay on top of you. We got three more
here.
Sure. So when you were told that you could not go back in, who told you you couldn't go back in, and why did he say you couldn't go back in?
The officer.
And
he didn't really
give
much reason. He said he had orders not to let me go back in.
Because it was
orders
private property.
But orders from who? I mean,
he said the owner of the building. He said from the owner of the building.
And it was private property.
Yeah, this has been other meetings at this building before, and I can't say renewal, and there's other people who held meetings there, and it does have a little a stage room, kind of like with seats, you know? It does have a nice meeting room. They're elevated, kind of like a little theater in there, and there has been other events there and stuff. Ben, I'm sure she's in good with the owner or whatever. They might have been part of American Airlines or something. I forgot what. But nevertheless, I'm sure, you know, it was just a phone, you know. Anyway, he was instructing that the owner said that you couldn't come back in. But they answered my reason because at first I was kind of stunned. This is a town hall, you know, with the assistant city manager, council members, you know. It's a, you know. But when he said, well, it's owned on private property, that's all. Now, the next one we had on the center, we had one. Gina had, and then she put an ad in the Black Boys paper there. You know, she put a big ad in there showing her having a town hall, which I'm the one that caused that. But she's got her ad in there, and then I put a sign out front a week before saying local voter education town hall. And
y'all
boy,
know,
she mad when she saw that. They came out.
Y'all know
and,
I have to keep Bob on task. Bob, we got to
go. Ahead,
go.
I'm off target. You go ahead. I'm off target. I'm off target. Y'all go ahead.
Push
the pause button. You have to, Carrie. Just push that pause button. It won't hurt.
Push Bob along. No, Bob, we just wanted that story because I was making a specific point that I don't feel that it's fair as a council person. And if Gina, if you want to call me about this, I'd love to talk to you about it. But I just don't think that it's fair for her to single you out. If it was on city property or a building of any type, for a district, city district meeting, it should have been open to everyone, and no one should have been excluded. And that's just the point we wanted to make. But thank you, Bob. We got to move on quickly.
Carrie, let me make one real quick point. And I'm out of here. I'll listen to you. Look, I don't pay attention to any of the three old council members, just the five new ones. The other ones don't even exist in my mind anymore. Gina's going out at the end, says she's retiring. They don't mean anything. Just look at the five new ones. That's all I'd focus on. Appreciate it, Carrie.
All right. Thank you. All right, y'all, let's move on quickly. Okay, let's talk about Crane. Bob called him Hollywood Crane from last Tuesday night. I don't know what that was about. You know, he appears to be a nice guy. That's the thing about Crane. He appears to be. He's done the show before. He appears to be a nice guy. We know that he's a real estate owner. He owns real estate. He owns a real estate company. He's a father, a husband, and a real estate broker. But the state of Como, I'm very concerned about that. He worked for the former councilman Byrd for 4 years. So whatever's going on in Como, he is involved, in my opinion, directly or indirectly. You know, if Como is in shambles, Michael Crane understood and understands exactly what's going on and how it got there because, again, he worked for Byrd for 4 years prior to being the current city council person for District 3. So that's kind of how I feel about that. Again, he's very average. He does not go against, you know, the voting block they have there. I just don't have anything special to say about him other than he seems like a nice guy. Pastor Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, they said our former mayor was nice.
Oh.
I mean, I've met a lot of, oh, she's so nice. But I'm like, have you ever looked at her voting record? And that's what I'm, you know, I would ask people to do. You know, nice people or mean people, look at their voting record and see what they've done.
And you know what? And I'm not going to open Bob's phone back up, but I'm going to tell you a story real quick, and I pray I'm getting it right. But Bob goes to a meeting. Golly, I hate that. You know, Bob, you're so well-winded, I got to tell this one for you. But Bob goes somewhere, some event, Michael Crane's there, and he invites Michael Crane to come on the show. Michael Crane kind of flips him off or whatever, and Bob says something to him, and I got to open Bob's line back up one more time. Bob, you better be quick with this. You said to him something, and he called you a dickhead?
Yeah, we kind of, you know, he didn't want to come on our show, so he tried to use an excuse. And it's right in front of the city manager, too. It was at a public event. And but anyway, he didn't want to come on. He said, which Kerry looked at it and thought he was wrong what he said. And I told him, I said, look, if I did anything, confront me. Come on the front, you know. And then he didn't want to, and I said, and he said, no, I'm not doing you. Turn around. I started calling him a coward. And he turned back around and called me you're a dickhead, real loud, and in front of everybody. And then I went out kind of the hallway. This is kind of a big place right in the hallway. And then I could hear him coming out going, Bob, I apologize. And then we spent a long time talking. And then that's when I found out that they were – and I got to make this short, too. I'm sorry. Everything goes to a long trail here. But that's when I got word, too, in that conversation that they were rearranging our schedule for our agenda. And I told him, I said, well, put it up to the public first. That's all. I'm always telling them, put it to the public first before you put it on there. And they don't do it. So, okay, Kerry. Keep that finger on the pause button. You can always shut me off real quick if you need to.
Thank you, Bob. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was the story. So it looks like he can be a hothead a little bit, but he was smart enough to go back and immediately apologize and say, you know, hey, I'm sorry, which probably, you know, it wasn't a smart thing to do as a council person, but I do respect the fact that he didn't let the mic close without saying that he apologized. Trolling Kazi, what are your thoughts on Michael Crane?
I think that Michael Crane is about the same IQ as Jared Williams. He is much more streetwise or crafty in a political sense. Prior to working for Brian Byrd, so he's put one of those bench – he's not just warming the bench. He's in the pipeline, just like Kerry Moon and a number of prospects. He worked in D.C. for another Congress member before he worked for Brian Byrd. So the Republican establishment has him positioned. I was surprised to find out he has an MBA and a law degree. So, you know, all this, you know, fancy pants, purple suit kind of stuff might be a shtick, but – he's most people think he's more conservative than Brian Byrd. And so he was wise enough to turn around and apologize to Bob, obviously. And that does show you a level of sophistication for long-term politics. So.
Absolutely. Adrian, your thoughts on Michael Crane?
Yes, Mr. Crane gets a B- with a circle over it so he can see his grade as well. I guess everybody's been in my class, so they know how I grade papers. But Mr. Crane, I would say that what you stated, like I'm on a website now looking at all our, you know, on the city's website looking at all their profiles, and it's nothing on him, you know, as far as his profile, it's nothing about him, you know. So me hearing what I just heard regarding some of his accolades, you know, this, that, or the other, it's like, why are none of your, you know, accolades on here, or who you really are? I would say with his real estate, I know about that, you know. I know about his real estate background, this, that, or the other. But you got to be mindful of that as well. who are you? You know real estate. You've been in that business. So he would be somebody who more readily would advocate and kind of show those people who's trying to get contracts or whatever, whatever for the city. Right. I think he's the person that'll probably, you know, kind of tilt his hand to get him a favorable means because he got that real estate, you know, background. I think you mentioned Como a lot, but I want people to also be mindful of the Las Vegas Trail area. That area is in need of somebody who's really concerned about seeing that area rise from everything that's wrong with it, you know. But I think with the time he served on the bird, he should have been able to get the knowledge and understanding of what was going on and make a change and make a difference. I think they had already, like I said, when Bird decided to run for mayor, I think they had already made the discussion. We're gonna put you in position. We're going to put you in position and get you ready for this seat. We don't think nobody else needs to be in the seat. But I don't think he's done enough. I think Como has been used as a smoke and mirrors thing. And I think Las Vegas Trail, they use that as a smoke and mirrors thing, just to gauge a certain group of people, just to get on board with them, only to not really do nothing for them in the end, you know. So Mr. Crane gets a B-. I think he does conduct himself professionally, but I don't think he's somebody that'll go against the grain, you know. So that's why I stand on Mr. Crane. I want to see more for not only Como, but I want to see more for the Las Vegas Trail area. And then again, when we were doing our campaigning, I made it a point to let them know that there's no reason the Ridgemont Mall should be shuttered like it is. Not in the area, considering the area that it's in. Mm-hmm. Ridgemont Mall is right. It's right opposite of the richest part of Fort Worth, Westover Hills. Yeah. If it's another rich part of Fort Worth, tell me. But it's right catty corner too, Westover Hills. So there's no reason that Ridgemont Mall should be shuttered like it is, you know, given the proximity of the Ridgemont Mall. That's it on my list, Mr. Crane.
I agree. Pastor Chris, Michael Crane.
I would agree. I would just say maybe a D.
Whoa. All right.
I think the whole city council is below C. I'll just say it like that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we're going to move on to Mr. Carlos Flores. He's a senior council member, y'all. Mr. Flores is a aerospace engineer by profession. Father, husband, councilman since 2017. However, he appears, in my opinion, and I'm a very discerning person, y'all. When I say people appear to me a certain way, I'm very discerning. To me, he comes off as very arrogant and detached.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes.
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 Very arrogant, very detached, as though don't approach me even. He appears to me to be unapproachable. His role on TRWD makes me a little bit nervous, and Thomas could probably elaborate a little bit more on this. But I watched a pre-council session once where he and David Cook were the only two people that could really speak on the money that was going back and forth into TRWD. And I'm not sure if Moon was there or not. But they oversimplified the issue to the point that Gina Bivens stepped in and said, I don't think people really understand what y'all are saying. Can y'all break that down in a different way so that people can follow where you're going? And it just kind of made me nervous that it almost seemed like the way they were doing it was somewhat slick. So, Thomas, can you elaborate on Carlos's Moon's connection with TRWD and how that all plays together?
Well, yeah, I've actually learned a lot more about Carlos and dealing with TRWD. So the Panther Island nightmare mess and all the money that will end up spent there, it's in his district. So, you know, I mean, realistically, as a council member, any development or growth or whatever, you got to be in the middle of it. It makes sense that he sits on the TRWD's subcommittee board, which is called TRVA. But here's where the problem is. And there's a good old boy clique, and it's not just good old boy white clique, but predominantly white males. And what's happened here is David Cook is supposed to be the top public servant for the city and answer to the city council. But in addition to his salary, he sits on that TRBA board underneath TRWD, and he gets to vote on moving Fort Worth taxpayer dollars into that project and other taxpayers from a bunch of other revenue streams. Additionally, so does Carlos. When I talked earlier about how they acculturate and turn them to where they all vote 9-0, 8-0, whatever.
Yes.
Part of the co-opting is the gigantic numbers that they let them participate in divvying up. And so by that, I mean, when we pay property taxes or any other sales tax that's supposed to go to the city, the council members learn quick to share with each other and then to vote some of those citizen dollars away from Fort Worth City priorities and into other government's priorities like the water district. So no government in Tarrant County has put more money into the Tarrant Regional Water District and the Panther Island Boondoggle than the city of Fort Worth. So the clique is specifically Carlos Flores and David Cook and the county administrator, G.K. Manius, and the K. Granger's son, and the police chief over there at TRWD, who's also the reservoir manager, who's probably not qualified. These folks are hunting buddies, sports buddies, golf buddies. Now, Carlos is an aerospace engineer, but he basically lost his job at Lockheed because he was spending so much time on his city council responsibilities. So he lists his job as dabbling in real estate. We have not been able to identify if he has real estate interests in or around the proposed island. But he is an engineer. He has that kind of math, you know, book intelligence, but he's socially awkward. Like he's actually sensitive to what people think about him. And so this is not the personality that you actually would expect in a public servant city council. He's not the person that plunges into a crowd and says, "Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming. How can I help you or serve you?" Because that's just not his persona. I mean, and I'm not making that much of an excuse for him, because he probably shouldn't have that kind of a job. Also, I mean, he's in that seat because there's a pretty good clique of Latino males in North Fort Worth that have controlled the politics there so long. So he's basically their designated hitter. And like a lot of the council members, he's afraid of the Police Officer Association. So of course he takes their money, and of course he's pro police and pro firefighter. And that's really kind of the bottom line with almost all of them now, even Maddie Parker that we're about to talk about, is they're terrified to even be critical of the Police Officer Association's politics because they know that they'll run a candidate against them. It's bad enough that they have the guns and the badges, but when you realize that they will spend money independent of the candidate, like look how much money Maddie Parker raised, and the truth is that the Police Officer Association outside of her spent like $80,000 on advertising through a consultant called Brian Epstein, who is historically the most consistently smear job political consultant in the history of Fort Worth. He worked for Kay Granger the first time she ran for Fort Worth City Council. And so, you know, Flores is more afraid of the Police Officer Association turning on him than probably any other council member. And maybe Maddie Parker also. I mean, the ads that were run against Deborah Peoples, Maddie didn't have any control over those, but she didn't publicly condemn them either. She let them do their dirty work. So
we're about to get to her next. We're just going to let Pastor Chris and Adrian, your thoughts on Mr. Flores.
Mr. Flores gets a D-. He gets a D- with a circle on it. My fellow panel man, I would just go up. Whatever he said, I concur. I think he do got a sense of arrogance. I think the best person that was beating his head this last election doing that vote away was Miss. I might be saying her name wrong. I think it was Jennifer Sardui. I think it was. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. she would have been. I think she was best suited for the position. You know, and I think she gave him a run for his britches. But it might be time for him to get rid of his. Clock is ticking for him as well, but he was arrogant. He's arrogant. He's like when we did the meeting with the Forest City Council, I mean, not the Forest Star Telegram, we did the Zoom thing with them, whatever it was. Oh, yeah, he was just so laid back. He knew they was gone. Yeah, he was just so comfortable with the questioning, this, that, or the other, you know. So, yeah, D minus with a circle on it.
D minus. Pastor Chris.
He gets a D.
Wow. Pastor Chris is breaking hard tonight. I listen, it is what it is. You know, and last but not least, y'all, is our mayor, Maddie Parker. We know that she's a mother. She's a wife. She's a mother of three. She's a wife. She was 5 years chief of staff for Betsy Price and the city council. She's founding CEO of the Fort Worth Cradle to Career and also Tarrant 2 and through T3 Partnership, whatever that is. We know that she earned a law degree. She's from Hyco, Texas, which we know is a very racist part of Texas. And recently, she refused to sign a letter along with other mayors advocating for the passage of two voting rights bills, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and the Freedom to Vote Act. I thought that spoke volume. Sometimes when you do things like that, you know, her reasoning for doing it was something as you know, she tried to say was she just doesn't sign on to everything just because she's in a group and they do it. But this isn't just any old thing. This is something very important to a lot of the people that vote for you. However, her decision not to participate really makes me question what we're really, really dealing with. And we know that's not a part of her job. She didn't have to do that as part of her job, but it just spoke to me to something else that's going on that we're missing. And so I don't know. In terms of job performance, I have not seen anything special, anything above average. In fact, what we've seen under Maddie Parker is a lot of changes that we are not necessarily in agreement with. And so it almost as though as a mayor, you know, she took a job that she knew wasn't paying what she was used to making, and now she wants to make that job pay what the other job paid. And then it also seems as though everything now is about convenience for her and the council as opposed to them making things convenient for the people, because we the people voted them in. So, you know, I don't know. Pastor Chris, your thoughts on Madam Mayor Parker?
I would give her an F.
Ooh.
You know, like I said, I just haven't seen anything that she's done. You know, it's like she pushes the Fort Worth way, you know, and I just don't, you know, I think she's not for the people.
Wow.
She's not for her constituents.
I agree. Adrian Smith.
She's going to get a U for unsatisfactory. We're talking about conduct now. And her grade, if you could grade somebody, she would get the grade of the last alphabet, and that would be a Z. She would get a Z. That means she needs to do a lot to come up to an F. It's a long way from a Z. It's a long way from F. So she gets a Z. But I will say this. I think she was groomed. You know, she is. Now she's trying not to, I used to say this, but now I think it's raining true. She is Betsy Price 2.0.
Oh.
She is Betsy Price 2.0. She served under her, so she understood. She got an understanding of what the job is and what the ins and outs, this, that, or the other. They groomed her, and they put her in place because they knew. They knew that they knew that what's her name? The one that's running again, you know what I'm talking about.
People?
I can't get Peoples.
Who?
They knew Peoples.
Okay.
Oh, they recalled that last election, and they knew Peoples hands down. She would have took this election had they not input Maddie Parker in that position. Hands down, this was Deborah Peoples' election. But she's been groomed. She's Betsy Price 2.0. She's starting to smell herself. She's getting on a power trip. I don't think she likes I don't think she likes opposition. That's why she's doing whatever she can to strip the powers from the people. But let me let Ms. Maddie Parker know, and maybe somebody will tell you, Ms. Maddie Parker, the voter wave is live, baby. The voter wave is live, and you will get swept up in it. I don't care how much money gets behind you, how much advertising they doing. I don't care about none of that. The will of the people, if the will of the people, if they come together, the will of the people is stronger than the will of a dollar, the almighty dollar. The will of the people is stronger than the dollar. So once the will of the people comes together, we could make something happen. But Miss Maddie Parker, she's on a power trip right now. She's on a power trip. She gets everything that I just said.
Wow, I hear you, Thomas Tolenkazi.
Well, in addition to the job she's had that other folks have listed, she also was an assistant to Kay Granger. Before that, she worked for the state representative Phil King, probably the most right-wing member of the Texas legislature. He's out of Parker County, Weatherford guy. So, she's definitely been groomed to move to this position. It is not that the right-wing, conservative, money people's plan for her to stay at mayor. I think they want her to serve two terms. That's their perfect scenario, and then run for Congress probably. Here's a couple of problems. She doesn't have the skills to run the city council where she keeps the council itself under control. A little bit like Gina Bivens, she does the same things, which she over-applies the marshals to use intimidation. The thing, let me just tell you the most core root, and I mean, I know politicians do this, but there's really no logical reason for doing this. There was no logical reason for not to sign that letter about voting rights. Mm-hmm. But she's so worried about the base that got her elected the first time. Now, what does that tell us all about her base? Are you telling me that you cannot win the election again because unless you have people who oppose voting rights back you again? I mean, that's outlandish. But here's the simplest thing for me. And remember, I'm an Aggie. She lists that she went to law school at Texas A&M School of Law. She did not. And what she does, when you call that out, she has a rationalization for it. And my point to all of that is more than anyone else on the council, she has situational integrity. She will move from one loyalty to another if it suits her personal agenda or her political agenda. And, I mean, that's terrible, but it's the truth. It's a really big deal that the Wesleyan grads, when it was Texas Wesleyan Law, are not allowed to say that they graduated from Texas A&M. And, you know, call it prestige or whatever you want to call it. The truth is that why would you misstate that on your resume? I mean, are you not proud of your Wesleyan Law degree? I mean, that's the degree you got. I mean, if you perceive that a Texas A&M law school degree sounds more prestigious, and that's why you're misrepresenting it, then what else will you misrepresent? And that's terrible, but it's the fact. I mean, that's just that. And the other thing is that I do think she tries to at least appear as if she's reaching out to populations that she doesn't have a comfort level with or experience with. But most of the time she does it, it's really awkward. I mean, it's not genuine or effective. And so, I mean, most of the folks on this call could probably be in a better position to use this word, but tokenism is the only strategy that she knows in order to connect with communities. So
let me interject real quick with that tokenism. Two things I observed during her campaign, and I know y'all can concur, y'all might be aware of this. It's a restaurant out here in Comal for Cowboy, I forgot what it is, Gallagaskins, yeah. Whatever. So Mr. Charleston White, prominent guy with a voice, this, that, or the other, she came to, I guess if there's something going on, they were trying to get her elected. But not only did she go there, she went to some, like you said, a tokenism. Wherever he have his one of his little sit-downs when he's doing his little thing, she actually was sitting amongst one of the elders in somebody's house. Mm-hmm. I didn't see nobody else on the campaign going to sit in nobody else's house. But she went wherever he asked her to come, sat in the house with one of the elders, and they were sitting around just having like a discussion, like they know each other. And I thought that was just like, wow, really? That's a
and they were dropping the N word like crazy.
Good strategy. And she was just sitting there just soaking it up like you know, had that look on her face like that what, you know, what did I get myself into? But hey, I gotta get some other people to believe that I'm for them, so hey, I gotta just go with it, you know. So
yeah.
We saw that video. We did see that video, Madam Mayor Parker, and it was not nice.
Yeah, she looked uncomfortable. She looked uncomfortable.
But she had no objection to them using the N-word, or she didn't seem uncomfortable with them using the N-word, even though it made me very uncomfortable. So,
right.
You know, it is what it is. I find her to be below average as a mayor, and I do not see where she should be receiving $106,000 or whatever that amount came to as mayor. I don't see in 8 months that she's proven that she deserves that type of raise. That's just my opinion. And dear City Council, I don't feel like y'all deserve that kind of raise either. I don't see that y'all done anything. And, you know, like me or love me, I'm going to tell you the truth. Or hate me or love me, I'm going to tell you the truth. And this was not a show where we were intentionally being ugly. I think it's truth be told, we were being like kind in the way that we stated what we stated tonight. But it was really just to say we're not satisfied with what we see. We really feel like you all need to pull that off the agenda because you're not worthy of raises right now, and do the taxpayers a service this time and spare us paying for something that you have not deserved at this particular point. I mean, and that's just what that is. Do y'all agree with me that they are not deserving of this raise right now, and it really should be pulled out Tuesday's agenda? I mean, I don't even know why we would put it to a taxpayer vote. Why do we need to go to the polls to say something that we could tell them in the city council meeting that we don't agree with this?
Well, because they won't listen just for this is what I think. If you want to raise, then make it contingent on the next election. In other words, you can vote for the raise for yourselves, or we can vote to approve the raise for yourselves, but make it effective the day after you win your next election, and then perform between now and then.
I'm not even going for that. There's no job in America where you can make $29,000 a year and in less than eight months walk into your boss's office and say, I'd like a raise to $106,000, but I have not done my job up to par so far, but I still think I deserve that raise. Nowhere in America can you do that. And I don't think that you should do it to the city of Fort Worth taxpayers either. That's just my opinion, y'all. Period.
Yeah.
You know, my thing is they knew what the salary was when they ran for it.
That's right.
And I don't think you're going to run. In other words, was your intention to run? To try to get a raise, you know, I want the job, but when I get in there, I'm gonna have to give me some more money. That's not right, and we shouldn't have to pay for something like that.
Nope.
Yeah, they wanted to change the hours and the pay.
Yep.
That I mean, they did.
Yep.
They wanted to do both of those things.
I just want to remind everybody and the voters. Remember, you all, they tried to sneak this on the ballot. I think 2 years ago, and we shot it. We voted it down. We had a power. They want to put it on the ballot, let them. But we had a power. We make the difference. We can vote it. We can vote it in, vote it out. Let's do it, people. We got this. They're not deserving of it. They haven't earned it. And that's all it is to it. I mean, you know. And then we got lawsuits pending. We still got lawsuits pending for the city.
Yeah.
You know, we still got a budget. We still got a budget thing going on. For the city, and we know Mr. Cook is cooking the books, so we got to get our house in order before we can consider giving you all raises.
Wow.
Well, that's right.
Say what?
Well, that's right. I mean, the four or five biggest issues that they're supposed to tackle during the 2 year term, they haven't gotten past one of them yet: redistricting, voting access, COVID management, police reform. They haven't handled any of those yet. I mean, what have you done to justify any raise? But secondly, here's one thing that's weird. How did this topic of conversation start to? How did it come up, and how did it evolve? And the reason why I ask that is, did they have a moving quorum to get to this? I mean, all nine of them are for it, but the point is did one of you talk to one of you about it, and one other person, and then went and talked to a third person, and then he talked to a fourth person? Because this is exactly what is an unlawful moving quorum. Did someone just come up with this idea during a work session?
Same way they changed the time. Because they just decided they wanted to do it, and they did it. I am interested in who the ringleader is too. I think Bob tried to get to the center of who started the change to time, and they never would tell him. I think he put it through a Freedom of Information Act request, and he still didn't ever get them to answer. Who was the deciding person that decided to make this an agenda item? And they never would say who that was. But, y'all, we got to get out of here tonight. We told y'all everything we got. Listen, on whether or not these people should get a raise, it's y'all's decision. But it is what it is. I want to thank my panel for coming out tonight. Wow, what a show. I want to thank Adrian Smith, Pastor Alcee Chris, and Thomas Torlinghazi. Thank you, the audience, tonight for listening. Tell someone, tell three people, in fact, about Let's Talk What Works. We're on every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. If you'd like to advertise here on Let's Talk What Works, send me an email at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. We'll advertise your businesses and run your campaign ads. Also, y'all, Let's Talk What Works is on Election Watch. We will be watching the upcoming elections. I think the Election Day is Election Day is March 1st. We will be reporting on that all the way up until March 1st, letting you know everything you need to know about this upcoming election. The Tarrant County elections. Tarrant County elections up until March 1st. And also we're going to be doing an election night watch party that night as well. Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here. We've done a due diligence. We told y'all everything y'all need to know about this this raise issue that they want. It's up to you all to decide. We'll see you next week. Good night.